I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown, Sleep Tight Stories.
You're listening to Facing Evil, a production of iHeartRadio and Tenderfoot TV. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individuals participating in the show and do not represent those of iHeartRadio or Tenderfoot TV. This podcast contains subject matter which may not be suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised.
Aloha, everyone. Welcome back to Facing Evil. I'm Rasha Pecoraro.
And I'm Yvette Gentile. Today, I am so excited to bring you a special conversation with two incredible filmmakers, Will Merrick and Nick Johnson.
That's right. They are the co-directors for the new movie, Missing, starring Nia Long, Storm Reid, Joaquin de Almeida, and many more. It's a wild edge-of-your-seat thriller with so many twists and turns, you will not see them coming, I promise you. We had the absolute pleasure and honor of getting to see the movie early, and we got invited to speak with the phenomenal directors of the film.
In fact, I even got to attend the premiere in San Francisco, which was amazing. But anyway, we loved this movie, and we loved even more talking with Will and Nick.
Absolutely. And before we dive right into it, you should know that the official Blu-ray release of Missing is out today, March 28th. It features so much bonus content, including Easter eggs, which I personally love, deleted scenes, and so much more. So go to the store, order it online, grab it off a shelf, or you can even find the movie digitally. And without further ado, let's meet Will Merrick and Nick Johnson.
Hey, thank you.
It's awesome to be here.
Oh my God. And I also have to give a shout out to Katie at Sony Pictures, because she's the one who sent Rasha and I an email saying, hey, you know, would you guys be interested in going to the screening or the premiere in LA? And we were like, oh my God, we'd love to go, but we're not going to be able to make it to LA. And she goes, well, there's one in San Francisco. And I'm like, oh, that's perfect. So I actually went to the Alamo Drafthouse to watch your movie, which was, it's an epic theater in the Mission District. But to watch your film on the big screen was fantastic. So we have to give a shout out to Katie. Thank you, Katie.
Yes, thank you, Katie.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
I know, and I got to watch it on my iPhone because I was flying to San Francisco to join my sister. But then that was like the day that Missing premiered was the day that like the FAA like shut everything down for a few hours. I couldn't fly, right? Yep. I couldn't fly from Portland to San Francisco, but it was almost kind of, but it was almost kind of epic that I got to watch it. I put it on my ring light. I flipped it over and I just watched.
The movie is good everywhere. It's good in the theater because it's good
really
to react
is.
With people, but it's kind of cool at home too because it's on computers. So it feels voyeuristic, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. First you're like, okay, computers like on the screen, like, am I going to be into this? It's so fascinating. Like you didn't stop just waiting for what's to happen next. So
That's definitely always been like we joke that like at every step of the way, even us, we had that reaction when Anish first pitched us the idea for searching. It's just like, how can this be good? But I think that's also I think that's the fun of it, is that like we are taking something that inherently shouldn't be entertaining, like a Google translation shouldn't be entertaining, or going through Google accounts should not be, you know, entertaining, but we're trying to turn it into big cinematic set pieces. So yeah, I think that's the fun of it. So thank you. And for going to the Alamo Drafthouse, that's so cool. It was a really unique premiere, and it's amazing to hear that you went.
Did you see that live stream of us and Nia and Storm all in?
We did. Cool. My husband Gino and I stayed after and listened to the live stream and saw you guys there with Nia, Nia Long and Storm Reid. I mean, it was epic, like so epic.
Yes.
On Facing Evil, like we always like to ask all of our guests, like, what led you to this career? Like, how did you get to this particular journey? And I guess I'll start with you, Nick, first. Why don't you tell us?
Yes. Yeah, so I think like all of us that worked on this movie, in particular, me, Will, Sev, Anish, and Natalie, our producers, I grew up loving just watching movies and also watching a lot of behind the scenes. You know, I remember watching the Pirates of the Caribbean Blu-ray feature making of and being like, oh, that's so cool. And so I started making movies with my cousins and then my friends when I was in middle school. And then in high school, I had a lot of really great teachers that taught film in class, not just like lazy, like I don't want to do anything today, so I'll put on a movie, but taught film as almost like you would a great novel. And so, you know, I was turned on to like Baz Luhrmann and Coen Brothers and started to appreciate film more as like an art form. And I think that combination of like big budget blockbuster storytelling of Pirates of the Caribbean mixed with appreciating like the auteurs of the Coen Brothers and Paul Thomas Anderson, I think is kind of what led me then to USC and ultimately to work with everyone.
I think a very similar story. I mean, we all have this kind of path where we became obsessed as little kids. Me and my sister made videos where we would fight like we were in Star Wars or something.
I love it.
Over like the YMCA or something. And I think I just realized early on that when my family watched them, they'd all be like having a great time, like watching this thing we put together. And then I got in theater in high school and recruited all those kids to be in stuff. And at the cast party, we would show the stuff we made. And I think just watching everybody react and have a good time watching these things made me obsessed with just creating movies and you know, just any kind of cinematic form. And then USC worked out and I came to LA and the rest was history. It's fun to just do what I was obsessed with as a teenager, still as an adult.
And did you guys go to school together?
Yeah, but we never met.
Yeah,
what?
Exactly. We so Will's 2 years younger than I am, and our path was kind of strange because I was in the same year as Anish, who directed the first movie, and I kind of was like a DP at the time. I didn't really edit much at USC, and then when I graduated, I kind of started editing more trailers and then my friends' movies. Like Will, if you want to tell your side of that path.
I became an editor quickly at USC because I'm from like a small town in North Carolina. So I mastered the editing because that was the only way I could make something good. So it turned into an invaluable skill when I went to college. And Anish and Sev needed an editor for a sort of like a Google spec commercial they were doing while I was still an undergrad. And an editing professor recommended me. And I guess they liked working with me because then they brought me back for the movie we did, Searching, which this movie is a spiritual successor to. And then Nick and I met at a coffee bean halfway between our houses. And we talked for about 20 minutes and then we worked together for the next 10 years. And it's been great.
So it's been 10 years. So that...
Not quite, I guess, but I know.
Six years. Yeah.
6 years.
Oh, whoa, that
you're
much
going
less?
On a decade.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rounding up.
I love the dynamic that the two of you have because I feel like just watching Missing and knowing your involvement in Searching and the path that you both were on at USC and everything you've just shared with us, you almost seem like you are siblings and you become family doing this, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Somebody came to us on one of the shoot days and said, I've never worked with twins before. We were like, oh, wow, not just siblings, twins. Oh,
we did. To be fair to them, we had masks on because it was during COVID. So
we did. COVID.
So our faces were obscured. So, you know, it's plausible that we're siblings. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, for our listeners that can't see you right now like we can, you're both very, very handsome young men, but you definitely look related for sure. I can totally see why they would make the mistake.
When you spend, I think, a lot of time with someone, as we have, like we just for the last 6 years really have been seen each other almost every day and in rooms just going stir crazy. We've developed like a secondhand language, I think, with each other that is sibling-esque. Yeah.
When we were in the trenches trying to finish Missing, I like looked out the window. I was like, do you ever feel that all this just world is just so just like, and Nick was like, I know exactly what you mean.
You don't have to finish your sentence.
You don't need to say it. I already know. I already, yeah.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is the question that I really want to ask. So there was searching. Was it searching, run, then missing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it a trilogy or is it not?
Not really. Not really.
Yeah, so I would say run is not in the same format, and I would say missing was always developed as like a sequel to searching. That's how we thought of it. We called it Searching 2 for the longest time. We knew that we wanted it to operate on its own, but we had always kind of seen it as like the standalone sequel to Searching. Run doesn't really share any similarities to either two, other than we have like an obsession with Easter eggs and like these thread lines. And so they do exist in the same universe, the Seven and Nish cinematic universe, whatever that is.
When you watch Missing, you're looking at a world where the events of Run actually did take place. But as movies, they're not related.
Gotcha. But I, you know, one of the things that I noticed, like the mother in each film is like the star, so to speak, you know, everything is surrounded by that. Is that a personal choice by Anish or by you guys? Can you share a little bit about that?
I mean, all three movies do really have family kind of at their core. And that mm-hmm. was present. I mean, Searching was all about family. And to us, that was as much a core part of the story as it being told on computer screens. It has to be about family and how sort of your connection with family is still central to your life, even with technology. And so that was given to us in the treatment by Anish and Sev for this movie. So they came up with that, but we wouldn't have done it any different ourselves if we could have.
Like, if you ever meet Sev or Anish, like, family is such a massive part of their lives. They love their family so much. And they've got really strong ties with their families and their siblings. Just knowing the films that Anish made at USC, they always had this tremendous heart to them. So I think that's something that Anish has always been interested in and wanted to do. So I think that's how that's made its way into the core of these movies.
I think the part that really resonated with me and Nick as well, I know, because we've talked about it, is just the idea that this movie kind of reflects how when you're growing up, you learn to understand who your parents are as people in a deeper way. When you're a kid, they're just your parent. And then when you grow up, you see them as a more nuanced person. And it was really cool that in the story from its inception here, that's kind of at the core of the mystery.
Without giving anything away, I was so struck by the relationship between Nia's character and Storm's character and between other family characters in the film. And I could not stop crying. I was crying because I got triggered in bad ways and in good ways. And I think that's where the two of you were going with it. And you were given this beautiful, beautiful platform. And I have to just thank you, because I'm the scaredy cat. I'm the one that can't watch it. Like, my sister watched it first since I, you know, missed the screening, and I saw it the next day, and I'm like, can I handle it? Am I going to be able to handle it? She's like, you're okay, but you're going to be triggered. Like, what did it take? You went from being editors together on Searching. How did that conversation go where they were like, all right, we want you to direct Missing?
It was quite a leap. It took a leap of faith, I think, on Seven and Nisha and Natalie's part, on Sony's part as well, and on all the actors' part. Because, again, we didn't have any real directorial experience to point to or draw on. I think the good thing was that because Searching was such a post-heavy movie, and we were brought on before there was even a script, really. There was just a treatment. So we were used to kind of developing and workshopping, kind of pseudo helping write something like this. We had developed the language from the very beginning, so the visual language. So Will and I were very confident that we could do this again. We knew exactly how to make it. And I think that gave everyone else the confidence that these guys know how to do this. And then I think when it came time to actually write it, we had previous experience dealing with Seven and Nisha, and they knew how we thought. They knew, like, our notes on story and how we thought about story and structure and characters. So they were confident we had the ability to do that. And we had actually been hired to do something for Paramount before this, actually, as writers. And so Will and I had already done that and had demonstrated that we had the ability to carry a project to fruition or to a script. And so that also, I think, gave everyone the confidence that we could do that. So, yeah, it was definitely a leap for us personally. But I think as we got going, we started to become a little bit more confident. Like, no, like, we know exactly how to make this, to the point where by the time we got to set, we knew exactly the shots that we needed. And it felt kind of natural to be doing that.
Very organic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I went to the screening here in San Francisco and I stayed afterwards, you know, for the Q&A, and I remember Neo was saying, like, you're going to do what? Like, how are we going to shoot this? You know, like,
oh, poor Neo really had to trust us.
Yeah.
Right. But she
sure did.
But she really did. And she was so, you know, gratefully, like, surprised and how it turned out. And like she said, it was one of the best experiences of her life. How do you feel about her saying that? You know, Nia Long, like, my all-time favorite, Love Jones, like, come on.
She's a legend right?
Yeah. Yes.
It's crazy that we crossed paths with her. It's so interesting to think about. And that she was one of the later people that we cast, and I just love so much that she's in this movie, because she's just the perfect person to play Storm's mom, for one thing. And just, you just got to watch the movie, you'll see why.
Yeah, the thing about Nia is, if you've ever met Nia or seen her in interviews, she has a motherly warmth to her. Like she, in some ways, I remember her talking to me about like something in my life. It, like she felt like a mom to me and Will sometimes, you know? And she had that relationship with Storm off camera as well. I think she sees Storm as being like a young version of her almost in a weird way. Like she can see, you know, when Nia started, I think she was... She was like pretty young when she was starting out.
Young.
So she has a lot of experience there. One thing that a lot of our actors have described, and I know John Cho described this on Searching, is that everyone has to like relearn their jobs. Mm. Everyone is relearning how to act like when you are just sitting in front of a screen and looking around. And in Nia's case, you know, there would be times where there'd just be one camera, like she said, like, 15, 20 feet away. And it's like, wait a minute, where's my coverage? Where am I looking at? What's my eye line?
Right.
It's almost like you're blocking a stage play or something. Mm-hmm. And then you're just asking everyone, the actors, the studio execs who are at Video Village, you're asking everyone, hey, it's going to look kind of weird at Video Village. It's just going to be this big wide. But trust us, like, please just trust us when we're going to be creating coverage and cutting in and it's going to look okay. And I think like, that took a lot of risk on all of our actors' parts, especially someone as established and experienced as Nia. But one of the most rewarding things was when she first saw the movie and she like liked it. It was such a relief because it was like, thank you for trusting us. And like, I'm so glad we pulled it off because we were asking a lot of them, I think, you know.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Just have to ask you guys, like, with all the technology, does this stuff really work? Is it going to solve cases?
It has, I think, a couple times. We're sort of morally agnostic about technology, I guess, where we're kind of in awe of its power, but we don't know if it's good or bad.
Yeah.
I think what makes this and Searching cool is we really wanted to commit to the idea that this could really happen. Like, it's we're past 90s kind of hacker beep, beep, boop, boop kind of computer movies. And yeah. And we're where the cool thing is, everything in this movie, there might be a couple little less important moments in this movie where we stretch like how easy it would be to guess somebody's password, for instance, but not by much. It all could happen.
Yeah.
Also, when you make a movie that takes place entirely on devices, technology, whereas in the 90s, technology was a plot device or just a way to get from point A to point B. In our movie, technology is our set. It's where the movie takes place. And so you owe the audience a higher degree of verisimilitude. And I think when we were writing the movie, it was always about, okay, let me pull up my Google account and see how I would actually do this if I was in this situation. Mm-hmm. For the most part, we really tried to not bend those rules and try to keep it really grounded. So I know, like, also when we were writing the movie, we were listening to true crime podcasts. We were listening to a lot of real cases and researching real cases and seeing how in a modern day things are solved. And so we wanted to always be respectful to, like, those victims and never really, like,
right,
cite them in the movie or anything. We don't want to, like, draw any more attention to those families. But I think we were definitely aware that this stuff, that technology is used, and use that as inspiration as well sometimes.
And it's cool because June is 18 years old and she's, like, better than the police in some ways.
Hello.
Because of this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Storm is such an incredible actress. We haven't had the opportunity, you know, to work with her or meet her yet, but we're really close to Chris Pine, who played her father.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was just as plausible to me, you know, Chris being her dad as Nia being, you know, her mom. And it just, I'm one degree away from Nia Long and Storm Reid. Thanks to you, Will and Nick. Thank you. You know, my sister and I are both, you know, huge movie buffs and love the history of it. And we love being on set. I would love to know, Will, let's start with you. And then I'd love to know, Nick, what was your absolute favorite part about being on set? I know that you only record, you know, you were filming for what, like 20 some days and then editing for 2-3 years. But yeah. I want to know what was that most magical moment like on set for you?
I think my favorite part about being on set was just after working so much to just get any little project off the ground, as when we were kind of beginning to try to make movies and seeing how hard all that was, just to show up and see all these people who were so great at their jobs and see this whole kind of machine come into place to make something happen and seeing everybody work toward the same goal. It was honestly kind of overwhelming at first. It was like, what are we doing directing this thing with all these trailers and stuff pulled up? But it was just really cool to just work with all the people, really.
I think my favorite part on set was probably seeing the actors bring nuance and life to the characters, because I think we had been writing alone in isolation during the pandemic in our own respective houses for so long. And then we had cut an animatic of the movie, which was just me and Will, like, performing very poorly all the lines. And it just had no life to it at all. And then all of a sudden, coming on set and seeing Nia or Storm or Joachim, who plays Javi, come in and breathe life into these roles.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you realize some of those things that you had written actually do have, like, a lot of humanity to them or emotion underneath that we had just kind of become numb to while writing. I think that was one of the coolest things, was to see all of that stuff come to life.
Yeah. And Joachim, oh my gosh, he was my heart.
I mean, everyone kind of has seen him in something, you know. Will and I were really familiar with him from, I loved 24 growing up.
Me too.
So he was in 24, but he's in Desperado. I mean, he's had such an incredible career. He trained with Lee Strasberg. He's trained with Stella Adler. He is a legend.
Mm-hmm.
He's just been around for so long. And it was really incredible to get to know him and see how he works. He is a truly phenomenal, a world-class actor. I hope that, like, I want to continue seeing him in stuff and roles that aren't just, like, the bad guy that he seems to always
play.
Right.
He's such a sweetheart in real life. He was perfect for the role. And I have such deep admiration for him as an actor, as, like, a craftsman.
And I love him and Storm, how they interact and, you know, oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, the two of them, they're never in the same scene physically.
Right.
They weren't in the same room ever when we were shooting. And one really great thing that Joachim and Storm wanted to do was be there for each other when they were doing their scenes. So Joachim, you know, came to LA to read with her during her scenes. And then likewise, Storm called in when we were shooting in Colombia to perform all of her scenes with him. And that's why that works, is because they were able to see each other, see how they're going to act. And then
real chemistry.
Yeah, we're very gracious as actors, you know, basically donate their time and make sure, you know, they had a scene partner. I don't think it would have worked without that.
What would you tell like young writers and directors that are coming up that are, you know, pounding the pavement, wanting to get their script, you know, seen, or what advice would both of you give, you know?
I think you really have to love the act of doing it.
Yes.
I think one of my favorite filmmakers, David Lynch.
Oh, we know David.
We met him.
Personally?
Personal hero of mine.
His song is the theme song for our previous podcast, Root of Evil.
We both love him.
I love his music.
Yeah.
I love everything he does. But he always talks about like the act of like doing, of like he just loves doing, loves making things. And I always think about that spirit of just making things, that if you love it enough, then all the work that you have to put in to make it, because you have to put in a lot of work to make it in this industry. Will and I were doing literally 16-hour days on searching, coming home, sleeping, waking up, going back to the office. And we did that for an extended period of time.
We were very young.
You're still very young. Yeah.
On Missing, we were grinding at the office and working literally 24/7. I'd come home, I'd log into my computer and continue working. And I would be miserable if I didn't love doing the thing, you know what I mean? I think Will and I both just love making movies. We love writing. We love working in After Effects. We love the act of doing these things. So I think the number one thing is if you got to love to do it. If you don't love doing it, if what you want to do is just be a filmmaker or go to a premiere, like you're going to be kind of miserable because you're going to have to put in a lot of work in the interim to get there. So I think that's one major thing. And I think also when you're setting out to craft stories or tell something, I think it really helps. I had a screenwriter tell me that to use corners of yourself is the way she put it. So you're not always making a biographical, you know, piece or whatever, but I think it's really important to find little true corners of yourself, little things that you can relate to. So for instance, in this movie, Will and I both have sisters, and we love our sisters. We love our moms. We drew a lot on like just how emotionally we feel about our sisters and how we observe our sisters and our moms interacting with each other. So it's important to always find those corners of yourself and find those capital T truth moments. Like for instance, Anish came up with the voicemails beat, which I won't tell anyone what happens to avoid spoilers, but that's a really emotional moment. And that came from him just listening to voicemails from his mom. So I think audiences can tell those things when you put something that's really truthful to yourself. So if you're starting out writing or whatever, I think look for those things that you're like, wow, that feels really true and emotional. Like, how do I put this into something?
Yes.
Yeah. Those are both great advice. Yeah.
Well, every episode of Facing Evil, so we are Hawaiian, born and raised in Hawaii, and the word imua means to move onward and upward, right? But really, especially for us doing Facing Evil, it's about finding the light in the dark, right? Or overcoming or healing. I would love to know what was the imua for you. And if you don't want to say what it was for you, what do you think it would be for your audience who hasn't watched Missing yet? And again, I'm going to say this till the cows come home. You can own it on digital March 7th or on Blu-ray March 28th.
We were starting to write this movie the week COVID hit. And I think trying to create the movie through that and doing a lot of work without our team around that we usually, you know, without being able to see each other or see all the people we were working with, really sort of made me at least realize how much I need those people around me in order to function normally. And seeing them slowly come back was one good thing, but also just learning to be more mindful and appreciative of people and to understand that it's always good to appreciate what's good about people as much as you possibly can, even in a stressful situation like some of this was getting through with COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think to bring it back to the movie as well, specifically, that is what June's journey is like through all of this.
Yeah.
Part of the fun of this movie is it's a detective mystery where she's looking for her mom, but at the same time, there's this other layer of she's finding out who her mom is and learning to appreciate her for who she is, and learning that in the time of darkness, in this time of like I've lost my mom and I'm losing, you know, like a someone I love, you actually learn how much you do love that person, how much you appreciate them.
And neither of them will ever give up.
Right.
Neither of them will ever let the other one go as long as they can do something.
That's the power of the film.
That is the power of the film. And, you know, when I left the theater that night, I was so emotional, you know, for so many different reasons, but it was the power of staying connected.
We would love to give you this opportunity. Of course, again, we know March 7th, it's on digital and Blu-ray on March 28th. But what's next for the two of you? Please tell me you're still working together, and please tell our listeners where they can find you and, of course, find Missing.
Of course. Yeah. So Will and I are definitely still working together. We hope to work together indefinitely going forward. And I think we also love working with Sev, Anisha, Natalie, and they've got some projects going on that we may be a part of as well. In terms of Missing, like you said, you can find it on Blu-ray. And I just want to plug that some Blu-rays come out where they have like special features. These special features, we've seen them, are like really good. Like if I were a viewer, like I'd be really excited for these special features. That kid in me that gets to watch all those like behind the scenes. This is like the one where it's really worth checking out.
Yeah.
So, and then in terms of where to find us, we're both mostly on Instagram. So my Instagram's @_NickDJohnson. And Will, what's your Instagram?
And I'm Will.Merrick.
Well, for me personally, it's just been the ultimate honor having you both on Facing Evil. You both are just brilliant, like deeply grounded human beings that I know you're going to do kill it. You're going to continue to kill it. Missing was fantastic on every single level. So I can't wait for what's next. So mahalo nui loa for being here with us.
Thank you so much. This was like a real joy meeting you and talking about the movie. Yeah, this was really fun. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you guys are great. Thank you so much.
Well, that's our show for today. We hope you enjoyed this discussion with Will Merrick and Nick Johnson, directors of the new movie Missing. The movie is now available digitally and on Blu-ray release out today.
We always love to hear what you think, so find us on social media or email us at facingevilpod@tenderfoot.tv.
And one small request, if you haven't already, please find us on iTunes and give us a good rating and review if you like what we do. Your support is always cherished.
Until next time.
Aloha.
Facing Evil is a production of iHeartRadio and Tenderfoot TV. The show is hosted by Rasha Pecoraro and Yvette Gentile. Matt Frederick and Alex Williams are executive producers on behalf of iHeartRadio, with producers Trevor Young and Jesse Funk. Donald Albright and Payne Lindsay are executive producers on behalf of Tenderfoot TV, alongside producer Tracy Kaplan. Our researcher is Carolyn Talmadge. Original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Find us on social media or email us at facingevilpod@tenderfoot.tv. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio or Tenderfoot TV, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.